Hello, I'm William Gallagher. Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. Our sponsors this week are Nom Nom and Samebox. More about those later. This week seems to me to be a very reversey kind of week. People who were for and against TikTok now seem to be, well, against and for TikTok. Epic Games will never let go of anything, and Apple keeps saying no and back and forth. And then there's the M3 MacBook Air. It's finally out. It's actually in people's hands. It's been tested. And what seemed like it was going to be the absolute best MacBook ever, well, there's a strong argument that at least a certain type of audience for it should ignore it completely and go for the MacBook Pro. Maybe it was ever thus. Wes Hilliard, as an avid Mac user, how do you stand now that we've had the test and results of the MacBook Air?
Well, it is a M3 MacBook Air, which is basically a label swap internally. We saw iFixit tear it down, and it is identical to the M2. But that M3 brings a lot, and I can say that I don't need it. I thought about it briefly, switching from my M1 Pro MacBook Pro to an M3 MacBook Air, but it's honestly just not worth the effort of trying to sell something.
I was tempted as well. I mean, I can't remember if I have an older MacBook Pro than you, but I have a 14-inch one. I was thinking, is 15 that better? And given what I do, would it be better? But then Apple Insider ran a piece that just laid it out, comparing the statistics and the specifications and the two. And if you price up the MacBook Air to do similar things to the MacBook Pro, the price difference is much smaller than we initially think. And you still have more throttling, more speed problems than I thought we were going to get. I figured with the end of the wedge, there'd be not a lot of difference between the MacBook Air's boxy shape and the MacBook Pro, so the ventilation would be the same. So all the old things that would slow down a MacBook Air when you're doing a lot of work, well, I thought would vanish, but I was foolishly wrong.
A fan, first of all, their active cooling makes a big difference. But the MacBook Air, it's fine. There's performance-wise, I don't think, me personally, I wouldn't see any real difference between an M3 and an M1 Pro. I'm not going to tax the system enough that I would need fans, and those who are probably should be buying the Pro in the first place. This device is very much made for the people who use it, and anyone worried about throttling shouldn't be looking at a MacBook Air in the first place.
That's a good point. About a month ago, I suddenly found my MacBook Pro. I was editing video and I was getting the beach ball. First time in years, and I was shocked. And I thought, does it know there's a new computer out? Is Apple trying to tell me something? But for some reason, and who knows why, I didn't update my MacBook Pro to macOS Sonoma until about a few weeks and a few days ago. So it was in the middle of still, you know, getting itself sorted out with it. That's why everything was slowing down. And since then, everything is back to glorious, speedy wonderfulness. And I can't justify changing machines at all.
So I was going through my MacBook Pro because, again, I was considering just buying the base 256 gig M3 MacBook Air. And I was just trying to decide, can I survive on that much? I'm not using the Mac for anything in particular beyond needing certain desktop apps every now and then. Every now and then I'll need desktop Chrome or Pixelmator Pro is quite the excellent photo editor.
Love that.
So for whatever reason, it's not on an iPad, even though it's functionally the same chipset. So I don't know what they're doing there. There's no reason why it shouldn't be on both. I really hope they get
They're
on that.
They're just teasing us. I mean, they do so many updates to Pixelmator Pro. They're always adding stuff. I'm sure it's got to be coming. But let us keep us hungry for a bit. That's the thing.
But yeah, I went through my system memory, and I have a 512 gig MacBook Pro. Actually, I have more storage on my iPad Pro and my Vision Pro than I do my MacBook. Because I go for 1 terabyte on those. I have 1 terabyte on my iPhone, actually. So turns out my Mac has the lowest storage option out of everything.
It's a crazy world. But okay. Let's just, you know, remember that your use of a Mac is chiefly as a shelf ornament. That's the way it seems to me.
Mostly. Yeah. It looks very nice on a shelf and a little stand. So anyway, I go through and I'm like, well, how much am I actually using? And I was somewhere in the 400s, but it turns out most of that was because I had my library on the computer, which I don't necessarily need, or I could do through an external storage device. My photo library is in the cloud. It's downloaded locally on my iPad Pro and my iPhone. So again, the no need for that sense of redundancy. It was honestly mostly my messages. Have you looked at your messages recently?
No.
The messages in the cloud and how much storage it takes up, especially if you download it locally. It's incredible how quickly that can grow. One conversation I have, I think, is somewhere around 16 gigabytes just because of videos being shared. You have to go in and delete that data one by one. There's no way to delete just the cloud data without deleting the conversation.
Ouch. I didn't know that, no. Okay. Yeah,
Apple doesn't have a very good system for iMessage. They very much treat it like it's supposed to be temporary. Yeah. That's why the options are... I have it selected to keep forever because I want to keep my messages, but they have options to just empty your message history once a week or once a month, and that's wild to me. I honestly, though, sitting here, I don't go back and look at it, but I want to have that ability. I don't want to just throw everything away, every conversation. I like that it's searchable. The search in messages is actually pretty good. It's just... they don't seem to have a good system for getting rid of the stuff you don't need anymore. Like, if you ever go, you can actually do this on Mac. You can go into your library folder as a user, go all the way down to the messages, look at the messages folders. Every sticker that's ever been sent is data in that folder. And it's in your cloud taking up storage. Every sticker, every video, every GIF... if you send 4K movies to your family of a graduation, that's all still in your cloud. Even if you saved it to your photo library, it's also redundantly saved in messages. So I recommend anyone who's looking at their storage wondering where a lot of it's going, go look at your message database. And yes, that means if you want to keep your messages but delete the media, you'll have to go into the conversation in iMessage and delete one by one. There is a section for this inside of the I button, the information button, to delete your media, but it's time consuming. Make sure you have everything you want to keep and delete the rest, because it does take up a lot of space.
I am perturbed by that, and I want to rush to go to do it, but the one by one business. I have this sudden flash memory of being in an Apple store. It's some problem with my iPhone, and the Apple genius said to me, "You've still got all your messages." And this would have been, I don't know, 2015 at the absolute latest. So I'd kept all of them for 6 or 7 years or something, and he was the shock on his face. And I went about it, but I've never actually chosen to delete it. I wonder if I could go back to my first ever messages, or delete them all and recover about a terabyte of space on all of my devices.
If you do it from the storage, or I'm sorry, from the messages app,
yeah.
It'll take you, you'll have to scroll, wait for it to download, scroll, wait for, because you have to wait for, it's not just all actually there, it's lying to you, it is in the cloud, but it also isn't surfaced completely either, even if it's downloaded to device, you have to wait for it to process, and it's painstaking. So again, maybe Apple's trying to tell us something of just let it go, let it, I actually, so long story short, actually long story long.
Okay.
I got my memory down to 127 gigs in my MacBook, and I'm still not done, like, eliminating unnecessary things. So it's just one of those things where I could easily have a 256 gig Mac, actually, and be just fine. I did go into, you can go into your messages section of your phone. I think it's in the cloud. Go to Cloud Sync, and there's actually a little history section if you want to look at this, William. So on your iPhone, click on your face in settings. It takes you to your iCloud settings. Go to iCloud, click on messages in the cloud, and there it should tell you how many messages you've ever sent, or at least currently have saved in your cloud.
Well, I've gone wrong somewhere, because I've ended up in a whole pile of emojis that I have never seen before.
Well, you shouldn't be in the settings, in the messages app. This is the settings app.
Okay. No, I took a step the wrong way there. I'll have to look into this properly later, and then maybe edit in a section where I sound cleverer, having gone straight to it. Does that sound possible? Okay. Oh. No. I have it. Oh, my lights. Okay, 1.3 gigabytes of messages. 31,775. That's
okay,
actually
I have you
less.
Beaten. I thought my stuff was going to actually be kind of low, but I'm sure compared to like a teenager, mine is minuscule. My managed storage section says 96 gigabytes.
Wow. Okay.
In iCloud, 125,000 messages.
Right, so basically listeners, you are 17 times more popular than I am. That's that fits, no, just actually.
Lots of active group chats. But I would say, listeners, go on social and let us know what your numbers are.
Yes,
can you
please
beat mine? I'm sure anyone could easily beat mine because I'm not that popular. So I'm sure there's someone out there with millions of iMessages saved in the cloud. So let us know about that and if you're going to go and delete anything or... maybe call bankruptcy and just delete it all and start over.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
I twitched when you said that. But one day, you've spent some time looking into this, and I realize I never have. Not true. I had a Mac Mini that was 128 gigabytes, and for a few weeks that was fine. I was doing okay. But then it reached a point where at least twice a day I would have to find about 10 gigabytes of something, anything, to get rid of in order to carry on working. And I remember towards the very, very end, mid-afternoon, everything would slow to a crawl, and it would take, I actually timed it, 6 to 8 minutes to save a text document. And that's when I gave in and I bought an Apple Silicon Mac Mini instead and right. Never looked back.
The 128 gigabytes hasn't been tenable in years.
No.
I don't think since like 2016 you could honestly say you could live with that unless you just did nothing on your devices.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing how that changes? You think of how little space we used to have. But at the time it was all I could afford. Is it irresponsible of Apple to sell basically inadequate amounts of storage?
Well, I remember my PlayStation 2 memory card being 8 megabytes.
Right.
And
yes.
And the disc that held the video game was, I believe, 2 gigabytes. We have come a long way. And to answer your question, I think it's fine. It's a price point. They want to hit that $999 with the MacBook Air M2 model. So they're going to offer the cheapest storage available to get it to that point. If they started at 512, they wouldn't be able to have that price point. It's meant to push people up who need it. And we're, you know, even me, not much of a Mac user, are still power users on that end of the spectrum. Most people have most of their data in the cloud these days, especially how Apple handles everything. It's all cloud-based now. Apps are cloud-based, photos, files. It's a lot of stuff is turning into Chromebooks where you just kind of have a browser that connects you to different cloud documents.
Wash your mouth out. Don't use that word about it. A MacBook is a Chromebook. Right, that's it. That's the end of this week's episode. Goodbye forever.
That's where we're going. And I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. There's people who use it that way. I'm not. Of course, the Mac is so much more than that because of, you know, they have onboard processing that can do stuff versus a Chromebook being a pile of garbage. But the concept of how the system works and how your data is stored is shifting to the cloud slowly but surely.
Yeah. Though, since you mentioned Chromebooks, there was a story this week saying, saying that a considerable number of new Mac buyers are actually switchers. It's not you and me buying the next Mac and carrying on in this environment. It's attracting new people. In fact, the figures were that half of recent Mac purchases were typically PCs or Chromebook users. Do you know this story?
I always love these. So this was SERP,
yes,
Consumer Intelligence Research Partners. And they've always got some good data, but again, where does this data come from? Who are they talking to? I believe this is one of those people who just stand outside of stores and ask people questions, which is fine. That's a good way to do a survey.
I'd like them to say
it's
that.
Fine.
I flash back to when I had to do that for these. Or actually, once BBC Radio, I was sent out to do a Vox Pop, stand on a corner and get somebody to say something interesting. And then after hours, you finally got someone. You had to stay for hours more to get someone, anyone that was willing to speak the opposite point of view for balance. So I feel for people who stand outside shops doing this kind of thing. I'd just like them to tell me they're doing it.
60% of Mac buyers in the last year were new to the platform, 16% of which were coming from Google Chromebook. And it, according to SERP, it says that the driving force behind these the move to Apple products is the iPhone. Of course,
right.
It's always been called? Do you know the term? This is, I'm giving you a quiz.
There's a halo effect. Is that
the halo effect? Oh, there you go.
That. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Gold star.
Thank you very much. Yes, I study for this every week. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong to be anti Chromebook. It's just because I don't happen to like Google Chrome.
Oh no, they're hot garbage. Oh, okay. I mean. Yeah. There are ones that you can pay $1,300 for. I wish I was joking. There are very expensive Chromebooks that are still internally hot garbage, 8 gigabytes of storage kind of machine. Like, they just turn on and connect you to Chrome and maybe have a little bit of a mobile processor in there with a display. But for some reason, they're made of aluminum and try to look like MacBooks. Yes, there are $1,300 Chromebooks. Some of them are nice. And some of the listeners are going to obviously write us and tell us how amazing Chromebooks are. I don't care. I just think they're terrible platforms. But if you have that much money, go buy a MacBook, please. They're so much more useful. But then, of course, the actual Chromebook that we're talking about, what most of the world knows as a Chromebook, is the $199 with a rebate coupon that you can get for three for $50 at Walmart. And people just beat with hammers in high schools all day and use them to prop up desks, Chromebooks. Uh-huh. And because, yes, they're just that fragile, that bad, and just go through, like, they're just, you want to talk about environmental concerns? Look at Chromebook. People get so mad at Apple for I don't know, not using the right grade of aluminum in their iPhone shells, and then here's Google over here filling landfills with just Chromebook components because they're literally hot garbage that they go to where they are originated from constantly.
I mean, if a Chromebook does what you need, why would you buy something else? And of course, not everybody can afford anything more. But
if that's the price range you're in, of course. Like, if we're talking about a $150 PC, yeah, right? If you're getting to that $300 range where you're trying to get a nicer Chromebook, my recommendation has always been just get an iPad and a $20 Bluetooth keyboard, and you'll be way better off by light years. Just way, way, way better off. It's the difference between buying a cooler to keep your food in and a refrigerator. It's just they kind of serve the same purpose, but one is so much better than the other. Chromebooks. I understand why they exist. Great for the education market to an extent. Terrible for the environment. Good for price. It's the same thing as those, like, $4. Do you remember the Amazon tablets that they would sell for $50 on Black Friday?
No, I don't. Fire tablets.
Again, they're... No. Yeah, I'm exposed to a side of the marketplace that's just kind of sad. It's where computers go to die. And I see what happens, like, with these government food stamp issued devices. And one of my family members got a hold of one of the government issued tablets recently because they started doing, not just phones, because I've talked about the phones before. They're really, really sad phones that probably cost 50 cents to make. The tablet is, it turns on and you're counting minutes before you get to the home screen. And then launching an app takes 30, 40 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then you get to type in the website, but you have to wait for the cursor to let you input text because it's so slow at accepting the text input field. And then you have to wait for the website to load. When you finally get to YouTube, it'll play a video for sure, because Once you're doing that part, it's just bringing the video in from the internet stream, and that's based on how fast the internet is. It's just, for whatever reason, loading the window Chrome and the apps and everything is just as slow as it could possibly be without turning off. That's where those tablets are.
This episode is brought to you by Nom Nom, personalized food made freshly for your dog and shipped free to your dog. Now, even growing up, I never had a dog, but so many friends do. And what I've seen with them is that they treat their dogs, their pets, like people, because they are, really. Every dog has its own individual character, its own entire personality, and as a result, also has their own tastes, their own likes and dislikes. So Nom Nom doesn't just make some generic dog food. It crafts meals for every individual dog. Freshly made dog food prepared by Nom Nom's team in Nashville, made with wholesome ingredients in nutrient-packed recipes designed by board-certified veterinary nutritionists and then cooked in the US. Over 40 million Nom Nom meals have already been delivered to dogs across the states, and I like this so much. The company offers a money-back guarantee that it calls Nomface. A Nomface is what your dog looks like when it is deliriously excited about dinner. And the Nom Nom company says that a Nomface is assured or you get your money back. Guaranteed. Go right now for 50% off your no-risk two-week trial at trynom.com/appleinsider. So that's spelled trynom.com/appleinsider for 50% off. trynom.com/appleinsider. And our thanks to Nom Nom for their support of the Apple Insider podcast. This all reminds me of, actually, I've got a relative who prefers PCs to Macs, fine, but he's quite, well, he used to be quite disparaging about how much money I would spend on a Mac. And I did point out to him that in the 6 or 7 years that I'd had, I think it was my 27-inch iMac, he had bought 6 PC laptops. And I just thought, who's getting the value here? It actually reminds me, it's the rich man's shoes story. Do you know this analogy? I might be mixing up the names. Rich man can buy a pair of boots, I think it is, not shoes, boots. They can spend $500 on a pair of boots and it will last them 30 years. A poor person can never get $500 to spend on boots, so they buy a $20 pair of boots, but it only lasts them a couple of months and then they have to buy another one. So over the same period, the poorer person is paying vastly more than the rich one.
I just had this happen in real life. Yes, so my girlfriend is waitstaff at a restaurant, and she just continuously goes and buys these no-name brand shoes from Walmart, right? And they're killing her feet. They fall apart within 3 or 4 months, and she's back to buy the same $20, $30 pair of shoes. And I finally just told her, look, all right, let me buy you some shoes. So I go and I get her Atoms, A-T-O-M-S, their new 001 brand, which is made for standing on your feet all day, kind of directed at nurses, people in like wait staff, stuff like that. Like, you're going to be running around, slip resistant, all that stuff. Really good shoes for the idea. Much more expensive. She would never spend this amount of money on a pair of shoes. They're, you know, in the range of $200. But those shoes will last her years, and she easily exceeds that in the amount of time. Because yes, it's so easy to spend $30 in the moment. But you never realize that now in the last 2 years, you spent $400 on shoes instead of just buying the good $200 pair that's going to last you much longer. Yeah, these situations arise quite a bit. This is the Chromebook issue, you know. Schools fill their computer labs with very, very cheap education discounted Chromebooks, and they're tossing them out a dozen at a time because they just shatter, break, stop working, keys fall off, kids are just terrible and beat them up, whatever. Rather than go for the next tier up Chromebooks that are a little bit more durable and have them last twice as long for a relatively minor price increase.
Yeah, it's complicated, isn't it? The last school I was in, they were telling me exactly. I go into schools visiting authors sometimes. The last one I was in was complaining about the incessant need to upgrade or fix or replace something because it just was never working anymore.
It reminds me a little bit of, what is it, Animal Farm? I always forget which one it's about. It's socialism, correct? So where you're basically told that you need 500 shoes and you're only given so much leather, so you start making shoes the size of your pinky, right? Because it doesn't matter how big the shoe is as long as they've reached the quota. It's kind of the same idea. You get to the point where it gets ridiculous because you're trying so hard to meet a goal that you lose track of what you're actually trying to do. And I think that's what happens with a lot of this stuff. Like, okay, so going back, don't get me wrong, guys. All right. I grew up very poor in a household that needed stuff like this. So government subsidized things. I don't take any issue with that. I just take issue with the fact that what they send you is might as well be a paperweight because it's functionally almost useless. Not useless. You can still get it to eventually get to the internet and do things for you, but basically functionally useless when they could have probably spent $20 more and got something actually worthwhile. Because like the brand they're sending is like Whoosh or something. It's like completely made up nonsense. Anyway, so I would definitely say the people who need this stuff should definitely like, and you can't get anything else. That's where you go and that's what you get. I just wish the worst wasn't so bad, you know. And anyway, to bring it back around, we saw a similar report recently saying that Android switchers coming to iPhone are also switching because of price. and we've noticed this, there's been a slow uptick. Yes, the premium brands, Samsung, Google, these other brands that are selling the high-end phones, they go to the store and they see that Samsung has a $2,200 foldable phone. They're starting to think, man, these Samsungs are getting expensive. And then they see a $400 iPhone SE and say, wow, I can afford an iPhone now. I'm going to get that instead. And that's, it's so funny how they've actually backed themselves into that corner.
I didn't know that. But people who can swap phones just based on the price surprise me, because if I try an Android phone, however cheap or expensive it is Android itself that I find really frustrating. The phone hardware can be great, but the actual minute-to-minute I'm using this, please let me go back to an iPhone experience, is so bad that I am locked into an iPhone unless something new comes along, a third thing.
We always forget, as you know, commoners, or at least I don't, because I try not to. I make it an active effort not to forget. But people who do these things in tech forget that the average user on the street, they're not taking advantage of the device's ecosystem things. The things that make an iPhone, or an Android, most people don't care or don't even know the distinction. They just know that it's a brand on the back of the phone. As far as they know, every single device they can buy is going to get them to TikTok, Facebook, whatever. It's they're web users. They're going to download an app for their bank and bank from there. They're going to download an app for their social media and go and visit that. As long as both platforms have all of the apps that they want, maybe except Fortnite. They'll be able to do what they need to do with whatever phone that they buy. So they're much easier to switch. They don't care. And maybe they're a little confused about the iMessage situation, or maybe younger people are bullied into becoming blue bubbles. Those things still exist. But the average user on the street just doesn't know or care about those ecosystem differences. And anytime I introduce people to the idea that there's something better on iPhone, or there's something that you can do with your iPhone that you've never heard of before, they lose their mind. They love it. And those ecosystem draws get them to stay, because once they learn about it, they don't want to go to something that doesn't have those things. But especially a first time smartphone buyers, or smartphone buyers who are going from making phone calls to actually using the device, those people do exist. you're not born knowing how to do everything on a smartphone. But those people who are coming into the world, becoming adults, making the money to do so, and making those decisions for the first time, are leaning more heavily iPhone because they see multiple reasons to go over to that platform. Again, peer pressure is one of them. Feature lock-in is another thing. But the first time they make the decision, maybe when they're teenagers, when their parents are buying them a phone, that's all they could afford was an Android. Maybe they want to try something different, what have you. But it always tends to be, I just want to get to Facebook. And then after that, everything else falls into place based on your use case. So many people I've helped switch from Android to iPhone don't even know about the ecosystem advantage. They just wanted a different device.
Suddenly thinking of children rebelling against their parents by switching to a different platform, and how tame a rebellion that is. I have a friend who's a novelist who, shall we say, in her youth was somewhat wild. And she was complaining to me that her daughters have rebelled by being very normal and boring. She thought it was rubbish. She led them down the wrong path. And I'm going down the wrong path. Now, anyway, you've said, every time I talk to you, I come away thinking of like five different things. And even in the last bit there, you were talking about TikTok, which things are going on there, apps that people do and don't use. Let me do this one, because this one really surprised me. There was news this week that subscription apps just don't really make a lot of money. There was this thing, did I?
Well, the title of that article should have been Apps Don't Make Money, but it just so happened that the study was on subscription
apps.
Well,
just this thing. I mean, I have friends who are developers who are doing very well with subscriptions. I subscribe to a fair few things. I mean, I realize just making a subscription version doesn't mean you're going to get customers. You've got to have a great app, but there are so many fantastic apps that you would kind of think they'd be doing all right. How do they keep going if they're not making any subscription money from it? But
well, so the math kind of works out. So when we talk about how many amazing apps there are, we could probably sit down between two of us, maybe get a few people together. We could probably name 300-400 solid, like, these are the wow, my goodness apps that everyone should try at least once and decide if it should be in their workflow. Because that, I mean, that sounds like a lot, but really it's not. I mean, my iPad has almost 200 apps on it by itself. And then I don't use that many apps that other people use. So again, you can get into, there's just so many branches you could go off here. So you could easily get a list of 300-500 apps together, but 500 isn't 5 million by a long shot. So the App Store has, I don't even know now, millions on millions of apps, just might as well say near infinite, because it's the TV show problem. A person cannot, in their lifetime, sit down and use every single app in existence. It just won't happen.
I am trying my best. So give me that. Okay.
So, and a lot of them are garbage. A lot of them are bad. A lot of them are, you know, so you start at the bottom level of, these are just the unnecessary 37,000 meditation apps that all do the same, that just set a timer and play pipe organ for a moment. Or here's a bunch of fart apps that Apple had to actually ban the category because it was ridiculous when iPhone first launched, right? There's stuff like that. And then you get to actual apps that serve a purpose. Here's your social media apps. Here's your tools. Here's how you do word processing or image editing. And those make up the middle. And then the very, very top, of course, is those just, my goodness, carrot weather, nothing like it, apps that can build interfaces and make use of iOS's ecosystem in a way no one's ever thought of. WidgetSmith just breaking through that ceiling and becoming this customization master for iPhone. There's so many, there's plenty of those, but again, not so many that it's in the thousands even, just in the hundreds. According to this research, about the top 5% of apps earn 200 times as much money as the rest.
Yeah.
Right? So the, and 5% of millions is still a lot of apps. So to think in our little circle, to say there's all these apps that make all kinds of money, it's so amazing, you just become a developer, go make some money, we're not really seeing all the failures underneath. And the App Store is designed in a way to promote the successes as well. There are new app debuts, but Apple picks and chooses how their editorial content goes. So you have that, you're entering such a narrow range of possible success that, according to this research, I would like to have the actual numbers in front of me if I can find it, but according to this research, basically the top, so you make an app, you put it on the App Store, and this is, again, this is about subscription apps only, not in-app purchase, not pay-to-play, nothing like that. Literally just, you get an app and you have to subscribe to it. So the business model that is doing app subscriptions, in order to reach the first $1,000, only 17% of apps do that, period. 17%. And once you hit that number, though, You've kind of broken through the ceilings, so to speak, because 60% of those reach $2,500, and 60% after that reach $5,000 a month. But 3.5% of all apps reach $10,000 in monthly revenue, which is what the research, or I believe actually TechCrunch covered part of this, but suggested once you reach about $10,000, that's when you can quit your job and go full indie, because that's enough to get by on.
Yeah,
very interesting numbers here. Of course, it's just not many apps can make money, and they just by sheer volume they can't. There's not enough people in the world to buy all the apps.
I just checked when you're saying that, and I have 166 apps on my iPhone. I honestly thought it'd be more than that because I feel like I'm constantly in them, but I'm always in the same ones. You're right.
We've discussed this before, and Vision Pro is kind of through a screw in the machine here, but I've been trying to slowly reduce my reliance on too many apps. I go back and forth. I right now, every Apple app that can serve a task, I've gone back to. So I'm now back on Apple Weather, Calendar, Contacts. Like, all of the Apple apps are the apps I'm using. And I'm trying to have a philosophy of only the apps that Apple cannot, only the functions Apple can't cover are the apps that I'm going to download. So call sheet, Apple doesn't have a good way. I mean, the TV app has a way to search for actors, but it's not a good way to really find out who's been in what and what episode. So call sheet's a great way to do this without, you know, IMDb kind of sucks. So call sheet actually does a really great job of this for just for an example of an app Apple doesn't have. Right. So that's kind of been my philosophy lately. Do you use Apple apps more or less, or do you just kind of grab whatever?
I've slowly iterated through finding different things, but a lot of them are Apple apps. But let me ask specifically then a grayer area. Apple has the Reminders app, which for what it does is actually superb and probably the best to-do app for almost people. But, you know, you put it next to my beloved OmniFocus or Things 3, Todoist Pro, and there are no candles being touched here. The difference is extraordinary. But there is still a to-do app on presumably Vision Pro. So would you stick with Apple's one, even though there are the same thing but better elsewhere?
Yes. So Reminders actually serves what I need beyond what I need, to the point where I've tried other paradigms. I've tried other notes apps too. I love Bear, for example. Bear is an amazing notes app. I just don't get any use out of any of these things. I feel like I'm wasting money and time trying to put effort into things that just I use. So Reminders especially, since they opened up that Kanban view where you can have multiple categories and put them side by side, that really sold it. Before I was using Reminders, it was fine, but that is what really just made it, okay, now I'm really a Reminders user. I'm not even going to bother looking anymore. Nothing else is going to be worth paying for. I got everything I need in Reminders because I use it for work scheduling, for maintaining the inside pages. And, you know, we're somewhere in the range of 200 pages I need to keep updated. And now I can just go through and have all the pages in Reminders and have certain days for each ones that I'm going to go check in on. And that Kanban view makes that so much easier because I can have categories for Mac, iPhone, and all that stuff. So definitely sticking with Reminders.
Not to get very specific and certainly not to criticize Reminders, because even though I don't use it, I think there are things it's done that are marvelous and that have affected all other to-do apps. But the Kanban view in particular looked really ugly to me when it first came out. Every section has to have something in every column. Even if there's nothing, there's something there. And if you try to move something out somewhere else, something else blank pops in. And the whole thing I thought of Kanban is you can see what's left to do and what you've done. You get a picture of everything. But with Reminders, you...
Right.
Yeah, it kind of takes it away.
No. It's a view that looks like it, but it's not actually Kanban.
What are they trying to push on us? Yeah, but it does make me think, actually, I quite like Kanban. I should look into it somewhere. I just haven't got around to it.
Have you tried Apple's Freeform app at all?
Yes, when it first came out. And I think you have to be a neater handwriter than me to make any use of it at all. But I see it as an iPad app, really. So I imagine you must be more into it than me. Yeah.
Well, I've barely touched it. I don't know. There's certain kinds of people in this world. And I'm trying to get better at it. Like I've bought a paper notebook. I'm reading some different like productivity books and stuff like that. And I'm trying to take notes. So I'm trying to get into that world more. But I've just never been much of a, like, my notes app primarily consists of show notes for podcasts. And various wish lists for collecting different things that I want to buy that I share with family members to give them like an interactive Christmas list, that kind of stuff. I make use of the notes app. Don't get me wrong. There's a couple dozen notes in there, but I know people who have thousands of notes in there, right?
Yes.
I'm not much of a note taker. I've never been much of a reminders person. I have reminders for different work tasks I need to get done or to remind me to take out the trash. Like, I've been trying to find ways to implement it. Reminders makes a great grocery list, right?
Yes.
But I'm just not much of a mind mapper, notes taker. Like, I'm not going to the Apple Vision Pro review. I'm not going to go and make a free form board of what I want to say in the Apple Vision Pro review before I go write it. I'm just going to go write it. Because for whatever reason, I've never felt the need to really organize my thoughts that way. They're just in my head and then I need to get them on paper. but maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know. I'm trying to break into this field. I hear people talk about it. I listen to a lot of podcasts where people are just praising how much they love note-taking and jump around all these apps and try all these different things. People are still worshiping Obsidian, which I have no use for whatsoever. And it just, it makes me wish that I had that ability. Again, I want to be a sports watcher, but I can't figure out how to get into it. So there you go.
No, skip sports. Although I understand the sports app has just been updated again. Let me rush to the App Store to get that.
March Madness.
Okay.
It's a basketball thing.
Right. Thank you. You and I should have a conversation about Omni Outliner at some point. But note-taking things, I make a magazine for a company about, I think, you know, variously 2 and 3 times a year. And it's enough involved, there's the online version, the PDF version, all this stuff, that I can never remember the last few steps for it. So I have a reference folder in Apple Notes that's, this is how you did it last time. And it has a video of the last few steps, it has notes. And over time, there's tons of Apple Insider stuff in there as well. It just grows and grows, and it's become my repository. It's my own little wiki for things. So yes, join us, come into the notes and the Omni Outliner world instead of, I know the truth, actually the only app you run is TikTok, isn't it? Face it.
I've never installed that app. I don't use it.
I'm going to tell you, actually, I have twice. I had to write a news story back when former President Trump was going to ban it before he decided more recently that you wouldn't. Right. I had to write a new story, and I thought, well, you can't write a new story about an app you don't know. So I installed it, I ran it, and I was deeply uncomfortable because the first thing it chose to show me was some schoolgirl twerking in a untoward manner. And I thought, I don't know what algorithm has decided to give me this, but I'm not very keen. And then 2 years later, I had to write about something else. I thought, I was unfair. Let's go back to it, do it properly. And a very similar video came up first. So I came away convinced it's only disquieting videos that are on there. And yet it isn't. So no, I'm missing out.
Yeah. Okay. Again, if you use TikTok, you're fine. I don't care. You do whatever you want. And just to be clear, I've never used TikTok, not because of some form of, like, you know, xenophobia or anything like that. It's mostly because I just hate the concept. I disdain everything to do with that platform, what it stands for, the form of entertainment, how it treats entertainment. It's disrespectful, and I hate it, so I just don't want to have it. So there you go.
I got it. Last night I had to make a promo video for something, and I had to offer it in proper landscape format and in a square format to go online, and I despair at square videos. There's an artist called Dar Williams, D-A-R, I deeply admire, and she ran this whole series of videos that were vertical or square, and then I think by accident, it looks, the last one was proper landscape. But that last one was gorgeous, and you felt like you were with her in her studio, and all the others, it just seemed a bit creepy, like you were trying to peer through the window and things. So if phones have done a bad thing in this world, it is the vertical and the square video. I'm ranting.
I just wish people would find information on their own rather than relying on an algorithm and 30-second videos where conspiracy theorists tell them things.
Yes.
For hours on end. Just seeing some of my relative screen times and how long they spend on TikTok per day, it's an epidemic. I don't know. I hate it. I kind of wish it would die. Not for the reasons the government wants it to die, but I want people to go outside and see the sun again. That's all. But I would say that this whole thing is very complicated and political, so we don't want to get too much into it. It's just, yes, it made it through the House, and as you're listening, it's probably already been kicked out of the Senate, because the Senate's probably not going to let this pass. But a bill hoping to ban TikTok, or at least force ByteDance divest from TikTok in the United States and create a separate company, has passed the House. They voted it through, but that House is mostly controlled by the Republican Party that wants to see it gone. They've had this agenda for, as you said, since Donald Trump was in office, and Trump was a big backer of this getting banned at the time, mostly to do with xenophobia, but other reasons that they claim.
Politics, yeah. Actually, if we're not going to touch on this, let's do it this way. Mike Worthley has, I think, a really nice piece on Apple Insider about this that just covers. It is about TikTok, but it's about much more than that. So I make sure, please look at the links for this one, because it's just a really good
read. The government's never been good at regulating things they don't understand. And one of the things that I agree with, that, again, not just not to make it super political, is the issue that I can get behind is, that people have with this bill is that they want to regulate it because it's attached to China when, and they're using privacy as their dog whistle when American companies are just as bad, if not worse, at collecting American citizens' data and selling it wholesale. But because it's the American government buying that data, they don't care about it. They're more worried about a Chinese company collecting the same data that they get to take advantage of. So we're, again, just, it's complicated, it's annoying, but honestly, just if only because it's so politically motivated, I hope this thing doesn't make it through. If there was a real national security reason or a real reason to have this go through, fine. But honestly, I don't really have any stakes in the game. If they get have to divest and become an American company, it's not the end of the world. I don't see an outright ban happening just because people are going to riot in the streets. This is going to become a part of the voting process. People are going to be campaigning on whether or not they want to ban TikTok. So it's a whole thing.
This week's Apple Insider podcast is brought to you by the AI email management tool, Samebox. Now, as actually you're going to hear later on in the episode, I love email. It is my absolute favorite way to connect, to communicate, and that's very nice for me. But even I, loving it this much, I get weighed down by the volume of email we have to deal with. It's just stuff that you have to do. And so often, it's stuff that, well, it's identical to the emails you sent last week and last month and last year, over and over. Plus, the more complicated and the more urgent a task you are currently having to concentrate on, you know, the more emails will interrupt you. Now, you do also know that technically, yes, you can switch off emails while you work, but actually in practice, no, you can't. You have clients, bosses, friends, family, whose people whose emails and contacts are so important that you can't miss them. You can't delay acting on them, even if it means letting all the others come through, letting your inbox bleep at you all day. But then you know where this is going. With Samebox, that's all over. An important email will auto-magically get through just as you need it, while a less urgent one will stay out of your hair until you're ready to read it. And then there are the ones that are important, but you physically cannot deal with them yet. Maybe it's just you are too busy on this sort of thing, but maybe it's that there is no way to usefully reply until you hear back from someone else first. So there you are. You know you can't do anything about that email yet, but if it's left sitting there in your inbox, it is left sitting there in your head, prodding away at you, distracting you, doing anything except making you feel good or productive. So you can tell Samebox to just get rid of it, please. Gone. Vanished. And it will come back, say, an hour later, when you are ready. When you have heard back from someone you've been waiting on. Or actually take that waiting business. We all have people we have to email that we know they're going to take forever to reply, even when it's urgent. Well, with Samebox, you can email them and BCC an address like 1week@samebox.com. That's the digit 1 and the word week. 1week@samebox.com. And just forget about it all. If that person replies, great. If they don't, if 1 week goes by without them replying, Samebox will remind you and you can chase them up. Find out for yourself. Find out how Samebox can help your time and your concentration with a free 2-week trial. Visit samebox.com/insider today to start your free trial and to get a $25 credit. So that's Samebox, samebox.com/insider. And our thanks to Samebox for supporting the Apple Insider podcast. I tell you what, let's take a deliberate step away from all politics and focus on something that I thought was groundbreaking news this week. It's Apple related. I've got to get the name right in my head. Clash of Clans. You can get a Clash of Clans game when you buy an Apple gift card.
Gems.
Gems.
You can get 500 gems when you buy a gift card.
Do I want 500 gems?
I don't understand where this came from, because it would make more sense if they partnered with a game that kind of matters today, like Honkai Star Rail, that something that actually...
You just make up these names, don't you, when you say this to me? That's not a real game.
I'm going to start making some up and see if you notice. Okay. But Honkai Star Rail is a real game. But this isn't a very modern game, but it does have a very loyal fan base, so I can see why people might be excited by the idea that they could get some free gems if they buy an Apple gift card. The money they're going to spend anyway on iTunes and apps and stuff like that, but still very silly, very weird promotion. I don't like the idea of Apple doing this, honestly. Just kind of stay in your lane kind of idea. Why are you doing these cross-app promotions with gift cards? Seems very un-Apple-like. But again, we've seen a lot of things change internally about Apple in recent years, especially when it comes to advertising and gimmicks like this. Yeah. So what can you tell me about Apple's ad moves?
Yes, I was just... If you forget Apple for a moment, whenever I hear something like this, a slightly odd kind of promotion, you think there's something contractual behind it. It's an agreement in order to do something else. Yes, fine, we'll do this. I'm not used to that with Apple, because Apple seems to be more or less in control.
Apple doesn't need Clash of Clans, so unless Clash of Clans just paid them a lot of money, but then why does Apple need the money from Clash of Clans? It's just a very odd thing. Perhaps
Apple's AI ad programming system project thing told them that this was the future.
There actually isn't a head of advertising at Apple now. It's just an LLM, the large language model. It's just not even a human being anymore. It's just generative outputs telling Apple what to do.
I knew about the AI stuff, but are you serious that the vice president of ad sales is now... an algorithm.
No, it might as well be, because Clash of Clans with a gift card sounds like something a generative AI would do.
Yeah, it does.
But no, so there's a rumor that Apple's working on upping its ad game by basically using generative AI to better target ads to users. But again, the only place Apple has ads at all is the App Store and news. So maybe they're looking to branch out. Where do you think they're going to branch out next, William?
Well, I'm dreading this. It's going to come to Apple TV Plus, isn't it?
Well, not for us. We pay for it.
Well, yeah, but what about Amazon Prime? I pay for that. And unless I pay more now, an extra top-up fee, I will get ads on Amazon Prime.
Very silly stuff.
So,
yes.
Yeah, it's... I mean, as a writer, I like the fact that television's exploded because of the streamers, but it was never really sustainable that it could be done only on subscriptions, because there's a finite number of large...
Devil's advocate here, devil's advocate. Apple probably should have an ad tier for Apple TV Plus, because it has a lot of great content that no one's going to pay to watch.
Good point. Maybe, I understand some sport is free. MLS or F or B.
Our fancy Messi soccer.
That's the one, yes. The Messi thing. Yes, that apparently you can watch some of that for free. But I realize there's no way, unless I was working for Apple Insider or was reading these stuff, I wouldn't know. Isn't there something in the States that there are 51 really good movies available to watch for free on Apple now? You have to be an Apple TV subscriber, but you get all of those.
Quote unquote free.
I purely wouldn't know about it if I hadn't read. I mean, actually,
or opened the Apple TV app, maybe. They're promoting it pretty heavily, and I think you actually check your email, which most Americans don't, I think I've seen the 60,000 counters on a lot of people's phones. But if you check your email, if you open the TV app, things like that have promoted it. Apple does cross promotion sometimes, like the Apple Music app will have promotions for Apple TV stuff. So there's ways of finding it, but yes, I think Apple needs to get better at telling people about this stuff. I don't know where they're going to tell people about it. Instagram Stories is one thing, but I guess people do follow Apple on Instagram. They tell people a lot of stuff on TikTok. Apple does have a TikTok. So I don't know. The company's always been very weird about how it gets information out. If you ever pay attention to its Twitter, Apple has music and TV shows and books. Many of its apps have its own Twitter, and they're kind of amusing at times. The humanity comes out in those apps, where Apple usually doesn't have much humanity.
Oh, right.
One thing I did notice was I happened to tune into the Oscars. So Apple News has live activities now, and whenever it's a big event like the Oscars, you can have the Oscars live activities from Apple News just show up on your home screen, and you can see what awards currently being announced, just whatever the talk is happening at that moment.
And it's not slanted. It doesn't say, Apple lost again. Another unfair loss for Apple.
But they were having fun. You could tell the editors were human. It wasn't just, you know, great, again, a generative AI. And when it ended, it was kind of, I had to chuckle. They said, and if you stick around, we'll have live coverage of, I can't remember, like, whatever cop show was coming after the Oscars on ABC.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah, I just thought that was funny. He's like, no, just kidding. We're done. So.
Okay. God, I remember the days when the slot after the Super Bowl was gold for a new TV series. And now, well, still is a bit, I suppose. Getting news out and things. I'm in a weird position that, yes, I write Rappel Insider. And, of course, you know, all of us were interested in this stuff. But I am next door to Europe. So I hear a lot about Europe stuff. And finally, to my great surprise, there's been some news from Apple about all the EU changes that I suddenly think I might exploit if I were in Europe. And it's this new update that third-party app developers will be able to sell their apps directly from their own websites.
Kind of.
Lots of considerations, lots of constraints and all that stuff. But up to now, it's been that app developers could create their own app store. And I'm thinking, fine, Epic Games probably will do it. Disney, I don't know, somebody else. Nobody that I'm in any way interested in. The odd individual one-off developer isn't going to go to it. But if they can sell straight from their website, I mean, I'm thinking so many apps I use, they sell the Mac version direct and they have to bounce you off to the iOS app store for it. It would just make much more sense to them if they could bundle it all in one price, one deal for it. I think that's actually potentially a good thing for developers and easier for users. And I never thought I would say that about any of the EU changes. So,
well, there's a problem.
Oh.
So the requirements are actually even more strict than requiring running an alternative app store. So in order to have an app distribute from your website, you already need to have been eligible for having an alternative store. The alt store developer, Riley, I forget his last name, it starts with a T, escaping me, was commenting on this and saying, I'm in the process of creating my own app store, but I'm not eligible for having an app download from a website given Apple's rules. And that's funny. So you need to already have an app that's popular for 2 years, million downloads a year. So basically you already have paid Apple €1 million. And they'll give you the permission to sell your app through your website after that. It's crazy.
Okay. All right. Well, I was briefly happy about that.
It's exciting in its own right. Like, the apps that can qualify for this, good for them. But, again, the requirements are so high.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if Apple doesn't want people to do this.
They don't want anyone to do it willy-nilly. I mean, again, this is where it comes in. Everyone thought, and I've been banging this drum, go back and listen to a podcast from, I don't know, a year ago when we were properly talking about this, and I have been saying, Apple is not going to sideload the way you think. Apple is not going to just take no money. You're not going to be able to just go get whatever you want from any website, and all of that is true. Everything I said came true. I don't know if y'all have been paying attention, but Apple gets their money. They're not allowing any apps to just be run on the iPhone. There is still a base security check on every single app. All things I said before any of this even existed, because it's Apple. We knew what they were going to do before they did it.
The house wins. And actually, I don't really have a problem with that. They make these things. They sell these things. It's fine. I admit this week I have had a problem with Apple, because I'm not sure if this is all this week or it might have stretched into the end of last week. But it appears that there are two micro LED manufacturers or packages, not sure which the difference is or where they overlap, that were doing deals with Apple, and Apple just suddenly said no. So the most recent one is a company that's out about $130 million, just gone. But the other one had built a $1.4 billion factory to make stuff like this. Who would actually work with Apple if you were at that risk of, I'm sure it wasn't on a whim, but in a moment, AMS Osram was the first one, we believe. Nobody's confirming this. They are the one, they said the move was a shock and they were still trying to get over this sudden blow for it. So it's not on a whim, but it is sudden. I just, who would partner with Apple unless it's Clash of Clans gems or something where the value doesn't seem to be that high? Do you trust Apple as a corporation? This is what I'm thinking.
Well, so speaking of trusting Apple, Epic Sweden is back. They have suddenly been allowed to return.
Joe, in a weird way, my mind is thinking we're moving off the bad stuff, but we're actually going into other bad stuff. But Epic is becoming almost funny now, I think. They're going to be accusing Apple of spelling things incorrectly next and stuff, aren't they? But yes, they're trying to hit them in the US for non-compliance. They're trying to hit them in the actually different non-compliance for it. Does anybody at Epic Games actually work on games anymore, do you think?
I think they just have a very large legal office at this point. It's all lawyers, no game developers.
Right. And I was trying to work out once, ages ago, from productivity purposes, which department of Apple makes the most? Is it the iPhone? Is it the legal department? And things.
I mean, yeah. The most creative thing Epic has done recently is copy Roblox. So, I mean, they must be doing something over there. I don't know.
See, now I've heard of Roblox, but I don't know what it is. Is that another game?
So, this is complicated. So, Roblox is a game engine people can, so there is a Roblox base model, but no one really uses that. You go in and create your little character and you run around and you join other people's games and worlds that they've built themselves using a proprietary engine provided by Roblox. You get their developer kit, you make their worlds, you submit it, and people can actually buy things that you've made, pay for access to your worlds. It becomes its own microcosm of developmental gaming stuff. So you can actually make money in Roblox. You can design your own skins. Wow. You can design your own outfits. It has it, and it's all done with Robux, and they have their own conversion systems that people have figured out how to create stock markets for Robux and know when to buy. It's a whole thing. Look, I wrote a giant article on this a couple of years ago, still relevant, about what is Roblox. Maybe we can get that in the show notes.
Yeah,
but
please. I've got to read
it's
that.
It's a whole deal. Fortnite looked at that and said, you know what? We can do that too. So recently, if anyone's paying attention, Fortnite announced that they're going to allow people to build their own worlds. There's a Mario world. There's a Star Wars world. Disney's partnered with Epic to make these different like Pixar worlds that you can pay to get into. And Fortnite is about to make a boatload of money from stealing everything that Roblox made. So
allegedly.
Well, the idea. They stole the idea. Yeah. And, you know, you can't... I'll give it to Epic.
Idea, no.
Epic came along with Fortnite, and they weren't the first one to do this. PUBG, among others, were the first to do Battle Royales. But Fortnite was the one that really broke through. And then everyone on the planet made Battle Royales, including Call of Duty. There's a Battle Royale mode in Call of Duty right now. It's hilarious that just everyone wanted to do it. So it's not a bad thing that Fortnite saw what Roblox was doing and did it as well. It's just funny to me that, again, they're out here complaining about all of this stuff and they're kind of doing the same thing that the rest of the market does. They've always been so hypocritical. I just wish they would stop talking and make good things, and then maybe I could like them again.
That'd be nice.
It's their mouths that get them in trouble, really. It's the same thing as Spotify. Just hush. Stop it.
Yes.
If they a good music app, stop talking, pay artists, get out of, you know, but nobody can be content with what they have.
I think there's a Scottish phrase of take a telling, Spotify and Epic, sort yourselves out. I think actually on that bombshell, that seems like a nice moment to end on for this week. I want to say that actually we have more things coming in the Apple Insider podcast over the next few months, so please listen out for those. Also, don't forget to listen to HomeKit Insider with someone not very far away from me. Wes, how's HomeKit Insider going? What are you covering these days?
Just, you know, talking about all the new stuff coming to Matter and different updates and how they're affecting us. This week we actually have a few new products to discuss. I think there's a new Sonos system to talk about, so I haven't actually recorded that yet with Andrew, so we'll see how that goes, but that'll be out on Monday.
Okay, Wes Hilliard and Andrew O'Hara on HomeKit Insider every Monday. Wes, where can people find you other than on HomeKit Insider?
Well, of course, you can always email me from my email that will be linked at the top of every article. There's a little email button. If I wrote the article, that links to my email address. Otherwise, Mastodon, that's where I'm primarily located. I do have an account on X. I technically have an account on Threads. I check that once, maybe every 6 months. X I'm on there for work stuff, so I'll see your notifications. I just don't actively use it. You can find me. It's not too hard.
We can hunt you down. Mm-hmm. That's what we can do. You actually said a few weeks ago that email is a good way to reach you, and I realized that's probably my favorite, so I'm going to say the same. Email for me through the Apple Insider website is good, but I'm also on YouTube, I think, is where I lurk most. In I have a 58 Keys channel. Maybe I should move that to TikTok. I think you've talked me into that now, so I'll look into that in the next week. And in the meantime, let me thank our sponsors, Samebox and Nom Nom, and let me also say thank you very much for listening. Back next week. Bye-bye now.
See y'all next week.